Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And learn, pray, act. That's basically how I'm going to kind of put it into a nutshell regarding our appeal to heaven and how we need to become integral in the process. I don't believe anywhere where there's a scripture that says that the responsibility of the Savior is saving nations. It's about saving souls. If we're to save the nation that he bestowed upon us, when they were creating the Constitution, they appealed to heaven to help erect and instill a government that was pleasing to him. This was the first time men with open minds of different religious paradigms and philosophical paradigms, very disparate. I mean, the framers were very divided over many of these issues. And yet they humbled themselves and they appealed to him to erect this nation based on a constitution that would be pleasing to him. Now, I can't emphasize enough how important it is. So maybe we need to start now helping sell this concept of getting everybody, making an appeal to your pastor now to actually read Washington's proclamation the Sunday before or a couple of Sundays before and remind people, let's no longer participate in the festivities of gluttony. I don't care what kind of package you want to create towards how the Puritans wanted to celebrate Thanksgiving for their little experience in their little world. But this nation was framed by the divine hand of providence. And if we actually start honoring Thanksgiving in the way that Washington and these great men who helped participate in the framing of this nation said we need to set aside a day of service to him, what would happen if all of a sudden people turned off their football games, they stopped buying, you know, these big, or having on Thursday this big gluttonous meal? Instead, let's have a good family get-together, like we do anyway, on the weekend and actually spend that one day Thursday going around and raking people's yards who, you know, the elderly, the infirm, helping children. However we can participate in serving others, we're only sanctifying this nation in doing that. Especially if that is our prayer in our hearts, that it's our intent. And as in addition, I can't emphasize the importance of fasting and setting aside that money and donating it to the cause that you really believe is worthy of assisting people. You know, there's so many people that just blindly give to, you know, these different causes where there's 70% goes to administration. Even maybe more than that. I mean, the Red Cross and many of these organizations, they may have started on really shoestring, you know, budgets and so forth, but they've become these huge conglomerates practically. So anyway, learn everything you need to know about the Constitution, what you have to do and get involved. Pray about what you're learning. And if you have the affirmation that this is what you should be doing, then act upon it. Learn, pray, and act. Okay? So do I need to remind you into the details much more? I don't think so. Especially any Christian that really has this affinity and this profound understanding of these principles and their profound effects. So the next, I'm going to actually squeeze something else in, and it's over the DOJ, because I don't think I've gotten a lot of good feedback on this principle. Now let's take a quick second here. Let's look at the DOJ. The DOJ was not created when the federal government was created, right? And so off the top of my head, I don't remember when they were created, but I think I can figure that out. Yes, I can. 1870. Okay, so if the DOJ was created in 1870, we're talking a century later after the Constitution was framed, they felt that they needed a DOJ. Now let's look at the enumerations within the Constitution. The enumerations are very specific and defined. And when we look at what laws the federal government has jurisdiction over, in other words, things that they can actually, you know, define and punish as crimes, treason, counterfeiting, the law, crimes committed against the laws of nations, which is external, and crimes committed on the high seas, crimes, misdemeanors, what have you, out on the high seas, external. So the only other thing that I can think of that they've added is some transportation of alcohol between states. And that is in the repeal of the, what was it, the 18th Amendment. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate the text there. Anyway, so when we look at the DOJ, their job is absolutely, I mean, the one thing that really came in before the DOJ was created and even before the prohibition appeal or repealing of the prohibition, where they have this little remnant of a law. And as a matter of fact, I think we need to repeal that law itself. I don't believe the federal government should have any control or any involvement in the transportation of liquor or what have you. I mean, this has to make sense, right, folks? So when, let me go look it up because I think it's important to cover it on the basis of what it is, right? And so, what is it, the 21st Amendment, I think? Is that it? Yep. The 18th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States is hereby repealed. Now, why is it that we just don't skip everything up or the next amendment slide into the 18th Amendment? Because we want to maintain the historical record of what these problems, what these things were. And I get that. But here is the little law that they tucked into the repealing. Everybody wanted them to repeal, and they said, you know what? We've got a little hook here. Let's take advantage. So this is what they put in. The transportation or importation into any state, territory, or possession of the United States for delivery or use therein of intoxicating liquors in violation of the laws thereof is hereby prohibited. What laws are there at this point? Because they just overcame those laws. So I think what you're really looking at is how they're saying that the transportation or importation or possession of the delivery of intoxicating liquors in violation of laws there are by, in other words, these laws that were created are now prohibited. This article shall be inoperative unless it shall be ratified. And so one really needs to look at that because today they have an ATF that is regulating the transportation, which I believe the only thing that they should possess is the ability to tax with excise taxes. And so they should be involved in the production, the transportation of legitimate products. Even moonshine, they don't have the authority to go into that. If a state wants to outlaw moonshine, but today you can actually buy moonshine off the shelf, at least in many states. Not that I'm advocating that you go do that, folks. But the point is this, is that the DOJ really only has the ability to ensure the enforcement of treason and the enforcement of counterfeiting. And technically, that's something that falls underneath the Secret Service on counterfeiting. They've kind of pigeonholed it there. And the same thing with threats to the president, national security, those types of things. When we look at today, the fact that if a person made outright threats to the president of the United States, I'm going to kill that guy, whatever those threats are, today they can actually come and arrest you by actually making threats. We've gotten to a point where we've actually decided it's okay to inhibit speech, political speech, so that, you know, they maintain this level of security. Political speech such as, you know, the president's a bum, he, you know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I've actually said that right there goes well beyond the pale. It's one thing to yell fire in a theater. It's another thing to actually, you know, while the plane is taking off, somebody yell out bomb. You know, there's certain places and points in time when you just don't say certain things because it causes public harm. I'm okay with having that context to, you know, allowing, because we have to allow ourselves to have some kind of guide to maintain civility and to have public safety, but not to lie. And more importantly, when we place context to this speech of threatening the president, even in emails, it does not matter. There needs to be a very tight scrutiny on how they look at that. And so I remember one time I actually said, you know, we should encourage all the kids to make a bunch of rancor and rhetoric, you know, about throwing out threats. Now, today, because the moral turpitude is where it is, and because we've debased our society to where I don't trust the kids today. Now, many people are saying otherwise, but I still don't trust the kids today to be able to, you know, not take it the wrong way. But I think as far as the exercising of rights, I believe that we should be able to actually say what we want to say when it comes to political commentary, to political speech. The fact that the Secret Service, they have these, they spy on everything, and somehow in their vacuuming of all of our communications, anybody that is communicating any types of threats about the president instantly turns, you know, full focus, wiretapping, monitoring, and watching you. And that right there, the fact that they even have the ability to cipher these things out because they're violating our Fourth Amendment rights. Let me even go further on this Fourth Amendment rights. Corporations are violating our Fourth Amendment rights. Today, corporations are government entities. Don't think otherwise, folks. This is not a mom-and-pop store that basically has registered with the state for tax purposes. When the state starts regulating the labor of your business, when they start regulating what you do, whether you can do it or not, then they become an agent for the state. And they basically become this, they create a symbiotic relationship with the state in employing people within that state, especially these major companies that come in and build, you know, Box, you know, Walmart, what have you. Fact of the matter is, the Constitution does not let the federal government be involved in any businesses in the United States. Any. Now, the IRS, or I should say not the IRS, the 17th Amendment, 16th Amendment, so I'm going to say the 17th probably a lot because we're planning on, just so you know, we're planning on creating an open forum for your state legislator. And if you want to get involved in this, let me know, because we're probably in April or May. I'm going to get the emails out. I know I've been really dragging my feet. Not dragging my feet. I'm just overtaxed. I'm doing too much. But bottom line, we're going to get an email out. We're going to pick a day to say we're going to host this open forum, and we welcome you, state legislators, to dial in so that we can actually have. So let me know, and we'll give you the information for the dial-in, because I just don't want it open for the public. But I want every state legislature to understand how they can quickly create the laws necessary. They can quickly create the foundation of taking full control over their senators. It is their suffrage that is guaranteed. The state legislature suffrage is guaranteed in that state Senate, or the U.S. Senate. So we want them to understand this, because the faster the states take away the ability for the Senate to, you know, sign treaties of digital currencies, sign these types of treaties of the next pandemic, World Health Organizations, all of the rest of these things, this is the beginning of the peeling back. Now, we also, I'm going to introduce the idea of reducing the cost of government by expanding representation. Don't tell me that when you expand representation, it has to cost money. Go look at New Hampshire and how they represent themselves in that state legislature with 400 representatives, and how they pay and how they do that job. It's an honor to be able to serve people. It is an honor. And I truly believe that the compensation that you get from government and these retirement things and everything else is more lucrative than anything else, because I truly believe that if you do honorable service, then you actually get compensation from that service. In other words, the divine compensation. Why is it that we don't cherish that anymore? But anyway, back to this legislature meeting. We want to actually do this so that we can get them in tune in taking back the Senate. It just appalls me that nobody cares about learning about the Constitution, because over the past, I don't know, almost 10 years, over the past 10 years, I've been really trying to reach out to help everybody understand you need to initiate republic review so that you can start realizing how much of the Constitution is being violated so that we can get our government back into the framework it needs to be operating from, the way it's designed to operate from. But oh no, nobody wants to listen or even consider that, because there are these organizations, John Birchers and so forth, that want to actually create ad hominem attacks and attack the person, the guy that created Republic Review, instead of actually going in and saying, well, what about this? What about going into the context of it, arguing the merits of it, and instead of actually contributing to being a part of the solution, they prove themselves over and over and over again that they're a part of the problem. Now, not the people in the organization per se, the leadership that is making these cognitive decisions to doing that. But anyway, the history of the DOJ was designed to do something. And I'm here to tell you that the DOJ, after the 14th Amendment, because it was created in 1870, right after the 14th Amendment, had it actually been tooled at that point in time to enforce the new standard of public service, that new standard under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is every public servant must support the Constitution, actively support it. And therefore, I believe that had the president and actually had the federal government said, that's what we're going to do. We're going to enforce the Constitution and the oath of office. If the DOJ is tooled in that capacity, we now actually have government ensuring that it will always maintain compliance, especially when we, the people, start really understanding the Constitution, so we can quickly call them out with First Amendment petitions and saying, you are violating your oath. Boom, that person's gone just that fast. They have laws that go after anybody that's creating a hostile work environment, whether it's sexual harassment, race, doesn't matter. They have laws now in unconstitutional labor laws that are quickly being enforced. And in actuality, I think it's just good cultural work business to actually do that, to actually make sure that you don't have a hostile work environment. I mean, the study's proven that hostile work environments are very negative for the corporate productivity. Why not police yourself? Do you need the federal government to create those kind of laws? And the only reason why corporations don't do that is because the corporations themselves are the problems. But instead of going back down that rat hole, the bottom line is, I just want to start focusing on ensuring that you understand that the only thing that the federal government, because as far as laws go, if it's not treason or counterfeiting, they don't have jurisdiction over crimes. That is all left to the state. Folks, when it comes to voter fraud, the only thing the federal government has a responsibility to is to ensure the election outcome of the members of the House of Representatives and the senators in the Congress, in the U.S. Congress, has been done properly. They have a responsibility to make sure that they were properly and duly elected. So you can challenge the duly election and go look at the 1811 petition where that was done, where they actually performed as they were supposed to and confirmed that somebody else was actually elected instead of the incumbent coming back in and saying, okay, I'm back for another session. And nobody challenged him until this person basically applied a First Amendment petition and said, hey, because he showed up and said, hey, that's my position. No, actually, it's his. And then he had to use a First Amendment petition for the redress of grievances, and he got that seat back. So, folks, this is what we have to do. We have to actually be actively engaged. And the reason that we haven't been taught this stuff, I mean, we see people today getting engaged, but they're getting engaged in the gripe and grievance industry instead of actually taking the superior stand and saying, where in the heck is this in the Constitution for you to be able to do these things? When it comes to the education system and teaching children things that are absolutely repugnant to what the parents' rights are and parental rights, there is no enumeration. Let me be clear on this, folks. When you look at the Ninth Amendment, right, and we actually go into this concept of what is enumerated in the Constitution, the Ninth Amendment says this: the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. So if the government claims that they have a right to do something like educate and teach your children something, it cannot be construed to deny or disparage those rights that are still possessed or reserved for the people, such as parental rights. There's nowhere in the Constitution, even in your state constitution, where you've actually come right out and said, we are granting this state full privileges over parental rights. In other words, we're surrendering the production of children and the rearing and raising of children to the state. In other words, we've actually dove straight into Engels and Marx's communist form of government, where we actually allow them to dictate who gets married, who has children, how many, and what to do with those children. That is Marx Engels' model of how to create this perfect communist society. It actually goes all the way back to Plato, because Plato was the one that actually devised that concept. Engels made sure that Marx included it. Marx actually thought it was a little bit too inflammatory. He said, I don't know. Even Marx the idiot knew something, and Engels the ideologue said, no, we've got to include that. So anyway, when we really look at the DOJ and what they should be doing, they absolutely should be enforcing every public servant's oath. And AOC, all of these people that are openly insurrecting against the Constitution would be gone. These judges, any judge that makes a ruling that allows an illegal to vote, that's a they don't have the ability to put their opinions in line. They don't have the ability to use the bench and their authority for activism and inflicting unconstitutional things upon you. We have the right to have them immediately removed and banned for life. Banned for life from public. That means that they can't even be a part of the bar. And as a matter of fact, the bar itself is a violation. Any member of the bar today, because of the 13th Amendment, they cannot even be citizens. Go look at the 13th Amendment that was ratified in 1812. We'll be right back, and we're going to dive a little bit more into this and then natural law and common law. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so from now on, I'm going to be talking and placing more context and focusing this, because bottom line, the DOJ, everybody in the DOJ needs to be rewired. Anybody that is involved in any kind of enforcement of law that is not constitutional needs to be removed and banned from public service and being able to serve the public in either a profit or trust. Period. Gone. Judges, everybody, court clerks, everybody. As a matter of fact, I will go back to the acts, the very first act of Congress in the very first session. The very first act they did was they made sure that everybody in public service took an oath to the Constitution. In other words, it expanded upon what actually Article 6 required, because they wanted to make sure that there would be nobody in office, nobody receiving a check from the government that would be able to insurrect against the Constitution. And look at the insurrectionists that are actually getting paid and funded by you and me, the taxpayers. You think that that should even exist at all? Absolutely not. It's biting the hand that feeds you, and it's absolutely subversive. And the DOJ need... Right now, all those agents that Biden put into the IRS and so forth, every single one of those needs to go, and the funding and or the plus up, so that we take over, and we could create these as temp jobs. In other words, we got 2 years worth of work to, or 4 years, whatever. It just budget it accordingly by two-year spans, so that once we clean up the Congress, once we clean up the federal courts and the executive system. Now, oh, by the way, don't even get me started on the banning or the shutting down or the dismantling of the Department of Education. Yeah, boy, that seems like a really nice thing, and it's a good idea. There's only the states should do that. Only the states can do that. The president is just going through an exercise of futility, because the next president will be able to wave his magical wand with an executive order and reestablish it just like Nixon did. And the problem is that they have no authority to do that. We got to stop looking at the presidents as being, it's okay to actually use executive orders to legislate, create, do away with, and those types of things. We don't have kings in America. Our law is king, period. Which basically brings me to what I want to talk about, common law and natural law. But I can't even talk about that, because I realized somebody pointed out that one of my shows didn't broadcast this week. We had a content show where we were covering Madison's notes on the Constitution, and for some reason, we got stepped on by a rerun of the North Carolina, my comments on North Carolina and so forth. And so I understand that we all want help. When we need help, we want it, especially when it's desperate times. That's what humanity is for. I don't want to be heartless, but I have to be pragmatic, and we have to actually understand what government can do. The day we say, well, government can make its own decisions, is the day we let the genie back out of the bottle. We need to get that genie back in the bottle, and we need to throw that bottle away. Government can only do those things delegated, and it is shut and close case, done. Bury it. If you want them to do something more, you have to grant it to them first, as Madison emphatically stated in his veto of the bonus bill, as Monroe emphatically stated in his veto of a similar bill, and even Andrew Jackson, the first Democrat, big government's putting, you know, the spoil system on steroids president, said the exact same thing. That we can only allow government to do those things that are enumerated or granted to them. So, when we look at what happened and what we want, I understand that government should not even be doing that. Don't misplace my sentiments with the fact that it's okay the government can actually use this technology and this weaponry to actually kill us. Those people, we need to start enforcing the Constitution, shutting all of these things down, and everybody that actually was involved in deciding to do that. I think I even mentioned this. It may have been Ansley on a different day, but I believe I did mention the fact that everybody that was involved in the Biden administration, this is one of the reasons why when we do dismantle, when the states dismantle, the states will take full control over the emails, all of the documentation, all of that, so they can scrub, and that's where you're going to get your justice. When you allow the federal government to constantly manage your justice and who can do what, because it's the honor amongst thieves, folks. This is the epitome of this. That's the epitome of corruption, why we don't get justice. The people that need to be seeking justice are the states. They're the parties to the compact, and they're the ones that will actually ensure that everybody that deserves a perp walk will do that perp walk. But we got priorities first. We're on the precipice of falling off here. As a nation, as a world, the things are lining up where, you know, the dark overlords are ready to just scoop in and take us over. Don't think that. So... When you see the chemtrails end, when you see the ending of all unconstitutional programs, the digital currency, and on and on and on, when you see those things actually being pushed to the states for dismantling and disposition, then you can start saying, yeah, we've got a great president. We're going in the right direction. The only way we get in that direction is Republic Review. The Republic Review may be a IP thing the GR did, but the people who own and control that is the states and the state legislatures. And we, the people, via our counties, control our state legislature and we control our counties. We actually have representation at every level, and we should be controlling all of our government. So what does that mean? That means that if we want to actually make things right, we have to make sure that our servants at the right levels are doing their job. When the federal government gets misaligned like it is, so badly misaligned, the state legislatures, it's their job to fix that. And when we look at our state and how screwed up it is and how it's attacking us and our parental rights, it's the county legislators' job to fix that. Just because the Supreme Court unconstitutionally came in and because of our ignorance on the Constitution, they got away with it and reframed our government, does not make that act legitimate. Does not make that act legitimate. We are a Republican form of government. As we pointed out, when you go through these documents of the framers, these legislative bodies are courts. They have the full power to absolutely strike down everything the judiciary is doing. And actually, Congress has the ability to completely reframe it back into the context of the Constitution. They have all that authority to do that. because it's actually in the Constitution that Congress shall regulate them. Folks, I'm not going to be excited about this anymore. I want to dive into the concepts of natural law and common law. Now, actually, one of the things that I did tell you that I wanted to talk about how we can start working together, right? And so let me just say this, that when we look at how to work together, you need to reach out. I have a few people that I've entrusted that can actually, you know, make connections with you. There was a gentleman that called from Utah. We were supposed to get back to you. We want to get back to you. You need to give us an email, because if you send us a phone number and then you don't take messages, or I can't leave a message, then you've made it impossible for me to call you back. And so I've kind of asked somebody to, you know, step in and say, let's see if we can find this guy, because you didn't even give us your name. Think about what you're giving us, because if you've tried to reach out and you're not giving us an email so that we can actually start communicating with you, then we go, well, maybe you didn't want to actually communicate. But bottom line, if you want to start getting organized and creating a movement in your state, I will tell you, I'm not surprised when people start understanding what this is and how to do this. It will amaze you of how easy it is in these dark red states. And dark red states, if you live in Idaho, you live in Utah, you live in a dark red state, don't think that this crap that's happening in all these other states isn't planned to come to your community in the next legislative session. They are going to be dumping this upon you, because right now you have all the... all sorts of corrupt people that are people that don't know what they're doing, and they're just going to do what they're told. You have to take your Republican form of government back. And lots of this is why we want to work with the Liberty Caucus, Freedom Caucus, whatever those alleged conservative caucuses are out there. We want them to actually be aware of how to take their Senate back, their U.S. Senate suffrage. So, one of the things we want to do is just make sure you give us a good contact information so we can get back to you. And then we can start working in creating what we'll call a little lecture series to start growing your state on the knowledge of interposition and the importance of using interposition as the only path in demanding our Republican form of government. Now, we also want you to start looking at what everybody else is selling. The best way to determine if the path that you're on, when somebody is selling you an idea on a convention, oh, well, we need to have this balanced budget amendment, or on the state level, we need to have an amendment that undoes the, you know, the representation of the county in the Senate. We want to restore that. Don't waste your time on a myopic convention that does not actually fix the problems that we're dealing with. And there are much greater problems than these little myopic issues. And actually, I can prove to you that if you're not weary of what you're doing, like that balanced budget amendment, I am here to tell you it is far more nefarious than you could even imagine. Because the balanced budget amendment shifts the scrutiny of enumerations, where they can only do those things enumerated and spend money on those things enumerated, to now saying, well, as long as you don't exceed this amount, you can spend the money. That gives them a blank check to always spend that amount of money. I think we're better off limiting them to only being able to spend on these things. Because when you look at that, there's more than enough revenue from taxes that cover the cost of those things easily. This is how we can actually begin to see tax relief. Now, as I always say, you're either a part of the solution or a part of the problem. Taking ownership is one of the most difficult parts, acknowledging that you're a part of the problem and then taking ownership. Now, in talking about natural law and common law, wow, I got 13 and a half minutes to dive into this. So I actually have, you know, a diatribe that I usually go through. But I want you to understand the only reason that we have nothing for you content-wise regarding natural law, or actually, let's be accurate. The laws of nature and nature's God, that's what they actually referred to, not natural law. Natural law is how the politically correct, godless, secular people started referring to it. It's kind of like natural science. Natural science is something that actually tries to tell you that evolution is evidenced and proven. And it's not. That's not science. Those are theories. Natural science is only based upon proof and evidence. Now, the laws of nature and nature's God were one of those things that became an agreed upon baseline. Now that as we kind of watch how we evolved, allowing evil out of the box and actually starting to run and giving them credence by allowing them to lie in court and do their mischievous things, because you got to understand that when you tell somebody that they don't have any morals, that we'll trust you, because in original court systems, or I should say in the original framing of our court systems in America, most people do not know this. If you were not a Christian in good standing, you could not testify in court. I want you to think about that. The reason why was they wanted to make sure that the person that was bearing testimony actually felt that they would be obligated and would be judged and punishment would be inflicted upon them for lying after swearing to the high holy creator that what they're about to say is the truth. Therefore, that makes the blaspheme, whatever you want to call it, they felt that a person that did not believe that they could be held accountable to a higher being, to the creator, they cannot be trusted. If they can't be held accountable, they can't be trusted. Even if 90% of what they say is true, it doesn't matter. They could not be trusted. And they created a system like that. Alexis de Tocqueville accounted for it in Democracy in America. In the 1830s, when he was touring around and, you know, doing discovery on why America was so successful, he discovered that there was these thresholds, these barriers from allowing mischievous people from being able to subvert our system. And so what ended up happening was some of these liars, these secular godless people, became martyrs and people's hearts swelled. And they got choked up, and they felt that there needed to be credence given to these folks like everybody else. And forgive me for the sarcasm, I'm sorry. The point is this, that having thresholds are absolutely okay if you actually believe that you're not passing any laws. I mean, it's one thing to have due process, but when somebody can bear testimony, and that's the whole point. Just remember that Thomas Jefferson was in this exact same position as a man who believed in the Almighty Creator, as a man who actually believed in Christ and his atoning. He was absolutely barred from bearing testimony because he was not a good Christian in standing in his community. He wasn't going to church, and the sheriff basically testified that Thomas Jefferson doesn't go to church, so he couldn't bear testimony in his own behalf. So I want you to understand this, that are we better off maintaining thresholds and barriers to ensure that the right people do not absolutely, the wrong people do not go to jail, the wrong people do not have to suffer? Because if somebody can get away with a lie and impugn somebody, because we've actually seen this. We've seen, how many times have we seen politicians attacked with salacious lies? And basically saying that they've committed adultery. They've, you know, they've had these licentious affairs, all of these big words. And the fact is those after the campaign came out to be proven wrong. And it still affected the campaign where they didn't make the Senate run in Alabama or in Georgia and so forth. Because they know, the godless secular people know, that all you need to do is throw a little fire brimstone sin label on somebody. And the Christians will use their scorched earth mentality of saying, no way can I vote for that guy. Folks, look, during the 2012 election, the evangelicals helped elect Obama because they refused to vote for a Mormon. I want you to think about that. They actually supported and allowed an Islamist who doesn't believe in the Constitution, the rule of law, and Christianity, a hybrid Islamist, communist, actually get elected again, instead of this evil Mormon. Now, I'm not going to dive into evil, good, bad, Christian, what have you. I'm proving a point when you actually allow using scorched earth instead of actually going through the issues. Remember, we're not supposed to have religious tests. And those people who apply religious tests actually have been duped, or because of what they're doing, they are actually being supported, or I should say they're supporting the wrong things. I've constantly seen how we've been played on our religion in making sure that the good religious people or a better person doesn't get elected and a godless bad person does. How is that good? I believe that there is that you have to look at the lesser of evils. We have to make a decision on the issues, not the morality, not the religious side. We need to void ourselves of making religious decisions regarding those people in public office, because when we actually withhold a vote because that other person is evil, they're all evil. I want you to know this. They're all evil. You're evil. We've all fallen. We've all fall short. We all. If you're Christian, you understand this. So how is it that you're falling short and everybody else is falling short isn't between you and him instead of, you know, you and the ballot box? In other words, place context to this, folks. If you stop actually doing this and you literally go through line by line the issues, who is the lesser of two evils, we will eliminate the ability of being manipulated. That's all I'm trying to say. Now, natural law, now I've only got 5 minutes. Natural law, the problem is that we've evolved. We've allowed this evil Satan out of the box to actually inculcate generations of bad paradigms. Instead of maintaining academic freedom, they have seized it and demanded ideological control. In other words, secular godlessness, ideological control over our education system instead of academic freedom. And so natural law and the laws of nature and nature's God, this concept has been basically wiped out, and we don't have, there's no really good book on actually defining that. And we have to get and restore academic freedom so that we can get scholars and members of all of the world's paradigms into distinguishing what the laws of nature and nature's God, a creator. Science has done more to prove that creation wasn't an accident than anything else. That there is intelligence design in life in this universe. So, what we need is we actually need to restore academic freedom. Common law is not what you think it is today. Common law from England was a part of the monarchical theocracy that grew over time. I mean, they actually had Anglo-Saxon laws for a few centuries, and then they adopted common law. And then they wanted to make it more and more of a God's law. So when we look at Blackstone's commentaries, when we actually look at Vattel's commentaries on the law, those types of things, or Friedrich Bastiat, when we look at these men, these great minds that talk about the laws and theories of laws and so forth, almost all of these men that people are clinging to did not understand our Constitution and a very limited and defined government. So when we look at these documents and everybody goes, see, this is good, because it sounds great, because you agree with the biblical doctrine or what have you. But we do not have a biblical doctrine. We have a limited and defined government at the federal level. We have a different limited and defined government at the state level. And we should be having a limited and defined government at the county. And there is the problem. The problem is you're not allowed to basically help forge and control your local government, which is something that you should have done. We all should have done. This is why counties matter most is so important in reading, because if we're going to take control, we have to understand some of the exit criteria. We have to understand these realistic expectations. And the only way we can get started is we have to create this little academic committee, this assembly of people actually looking at the founding documents and so forth to make these decisions to force the hand of your county legislators in doing the right thing. When I say force, when you create a common law fact-finding committee to make declarations on what constitution is legitimate, what is legitimate within that, and they actually come forward and give you the products that come from the source documents that only the hard-written constitution and the hard-written amendments is the only legitimate constitution. This living constitution that the jurists have created is an abomination. This is where they've assumed power, and this is where they rule us from unconstitutionally. And that's how they created a judiciary form of government. And see, as I've been saying this for a while, people are really starting to get this, and I really appreciate that. I know I'm not the best communicator, but when you really start applying this, when you start looking, look at the models, look at these things, start scrutinizing, you'll start realizing that interposition, demanding compliance, understanding the law and demanding compliance to that law verbatim. Every letter of the law must be complied with, every clause. That way, when we understand the intent, when we understand how the framers actually defined those powers, those enumerations, then it becomes very, very clear that they're when they're exercising powers not granted. So with that, I will basically state here, and I'll state it again, that there's really no good document for me to even recommend on common law, on the laws of nature, nature's God. We've not evolved in academia. We've actually deteriorated, so we don't have anything. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.